Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we are most certainly in interesting times, and in these kind of interesting times, we need a little humor, something to make you laugh, even when it's incredibly absurd what's going on. In fact, you know, today the CDC and the FDA, they paused on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and which is, you got a bunch of people, you know, kind of up in arms. When you look at the numbers, though, six women out of 6.8 million people developed blood clots. And I'm sitting there going, six women, stop this whole thing? It's kind of crazy. Then you had the former guy chiming in saying, no, it's a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy. Because evidently Joe Biden might have stock in one of the other companies. Very strange. But here to help us get through this, maybe with a smile and a laugh, I've asked Trey Crowder to come talk with us. Trey is a writer, comedian, the co-author of the Liberal Redneck Manifesto, Dragon Dixie Out of the Dark. Trey, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Yeah, glad to be here, buddy.
So what do you think of this Johnson & Johnson thing? Six women who were probably just sitting too long in the car. They got the blood clots.
Yeah, I think it's nothing to worry about for that reason. I mean, you know, like canned meat has a higher rate of messing your blood up, I would think, than 6 out of 7 million. You know what I mean? 6 people out of 7 million. So I'm not at all worried about it. But as soon as I saw it, I was like, well, I know what this is about to be. They're going to take this ball and run with it, you know, and make it like it's anti-vaxxers Christmas, you know, when it comes to this situation. So I'm not surprised by any of that. It just, you'll have that. It is what it is. But it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, what's interesting is the people who are most up in arms about this, at least the ones who are saying, see, I told you, are people who are never going to get the vaccine to begin
with. 100%. Yes, they were never going to get it. It's people that, you know, I mentioned canned meat earlier, but I just think about like people that I went to high school with that I see on Facebook saying they would never get the vaccine, you know, because the government told them to. And I'm like, I saw you eat a possum because a dude named Lugnut told you to, you know, like you got real high standards now for what you're putting in your body. But, you know, they just, it's because of the source. But you're right. They weren't going to get it either way, but that's not going to stop them from running their mouth about how big of a controversy this is, what has happened, when really it's not. The other thing is they're going to use this validation to be like, look, we told you it wasn't safe, when in reality it's the opposite, in my opinion. It's like, no, we told you it was incredibly safe. It's so incredibly safe that you can't even get the vaccine that has a 0.0000088, you know, failure rate or whatever. It's not even open to you because that's how safe and regulated it is. But they're not going to see it that way.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I love these cereal box epidemiologists who are telling us that it was a hoax, that the virus isn't real, and now that this is horribly tragic.
Yeah, right. Well, they say, you know, they're like, yes, like you said, cereal box epidemiologist, they're, you know, do your research. They'll say, it's like watching YouTube with your mouth open ain't research, you know? Like, it's not what research is. It's not what that word means. But yes, it's infuriating because wow, I'm about to make myself sound stupid and put myself under the same category for bringing this up. But what's the name of that phenomenon? Is it the Dunning-Kruger effect? Is that what it is, where it's like the people that are the least informed are the most confident about something because they don't have the capacity to recognize how wrong they are about the thing, you know? So, yeah, you see that.
Your average Fox News viewer.
Right, yeah. Just see it just through the roof.
I used to say that they're not stupid. They're just over-misinformed. But I got to tell you, when you're constantly over misinformed and you go, yeah, I want more of that, I got to default to stupid.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely. Yes, it's definitely. I tell you what, though, it's weird. I mean, because I've said this a lot, because I grew up in Salina, Tennessee, an extremely rural town in Tennessee, like graduated with 60 people, which was the biggest class my high school had ever seen. No traffic lights, no nothing. And when I left Salina at 18, I thought I had it all figured out. I was like, okay, there's two parties. There's two types of people. There's liberals, there's conservatives, and there's smart people and there's dumb people. And that's how that works. Like the conservative, that's dumb people. That's where all the dumb people go. And that's just how that works. But after college, I got a day job as I was getting started in comedy, I worked for the U.S. Department of Energy in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, with a bunch of like high level engineers and scientists and stuff. Plenty of them were what you would expect, but some of them were like the most hardcore. I guarantee you some of them are QAnon people now. They were the most hardcore, like pro-Trumpy type people I'd ever met. And it made me realize like, oh, this is just, I mean, I don't know how to explain it, but it's like, it's more complicated than just smart versus dumb, you know?
Exactly.
Although, believe me, there's plenty of dumb for sure.
On all sides of the equation, most certainly, but just seems to be a lot on that side. And, you know, but here's the thing, you know, the Southern accent gets mocked a lot. So a part of your shtick is, you're a bright guy, you're college educated, first person to go to college in your family. Mm-hmm. You know, worked for the Department of Energy, which I guess, you know, what was his name? Rick Perry, couldn't remember.
I got out before Rick Perry, which is one of the things I've been most retroactively grateful for to my comedy fans is that they kept me from having to work for Rick Perry. When I worked for the DOE, the Secretaries of Energy was like the head of nuclear physics at Stanford, or like the head of physics and engineering at MIT. That's who ran the DOE. And then after I left in 2016, it was, you know, a dancing Texas dip bleep, you know what I mean? Like, so yeah, but I missed the Rick Perry years, thankfully. But anyway, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, good for you. But you know, what I was getting to is, you know, the Southern accent is one that is, you know, synonymous with stupid. And you're clearly not a stupid guy. So you know, and I know a lot of Southern people who are, you know, are brilliant people. How do you get past that?
Well, I mean, in my experience, you have to go viral saying some not dumb stuff.
So you just fully embrace it.
Yeah, but like honestly, that makes it sound like I'm past it, and I'm not. People still, fans of mine who have been fans of mine for a long time will still say things to me. It's like, how did you get to college? You know, like that, like they can't believe it. It's like, you know, I drove, you know what I mean? Like it's a weird thing. It's fine. Like I honestly had a huge chip on my shoulder about it when I was younger. It used to really bother me because I identified as like a smart kid and I made good grades and I was like, I'm smart. You know, I now know that I'm not nearly as smart as I thought I was. When I left Salina, I thought I was Good Will Hunting, right? Like literally. But I knew also that because of my accent and the way I sounded, people thought that I was stupid. And that used to really, really bother me a lot. But I got to a point where I realized that like that could actually be to my advantage.
No, because this is where I'm going.
Which
with
is sort
this.
Of how I use it in comedy. It's not, that makes it sound contrived. It's not contrived. It is it's authentic. But I just recognize that like, oh, that can work kind of, you know? So that's how I sort of reconcile with it.
So everything that comes out in your videos, which are fabulous, and I highly suggest people take a look at the liberal redneck stuff. It's terrific. But everything in there, you believe 100%, that's you.
Yes. And I mean, you know, you can tell by listening to me, right? Like that again, fans of mine who have been fans since I started the liberal redneck thing 5 years ago, still to this day, I'll get comments from people who are longtime fans of mine. And they'll say things like, Trey, you know, we love you, right? You don't have to keep faking that accent if you don't want to. And it's like, I'm not faking it. Like it's not what people don't realize is when I first, my accent is like way, way dampened from when I first left my hometown. Wow. When I first left Salina, I sounded like this when I left Salina. Like, and I got made fun of in Salina for talking proper, talking like a city boy. So it's like people don't realize how relative it all is, you know? People think that I'm putting on a fake hillbilly accent. It's like, I've worked really hard to proper my accent up, actually.
You're presentable. Got your Sunday best on.
Right. Yeah.
So
exactly.
What's the difference between a liberal redneck and a hillbilly? What's the difference?
Well, I mean, it's actually very, very regional. I've had this conversation with like the guys I tour with, Corey and Drew. They're from small towns, but in like, you know, Corey's from North Georgia, Drew's from East Tennessee. I'm from a few, you know, like 100 miles west in Tennessee, and even in that short of a distance, like. In Drew's hometown, hillbilly was fine. They self-identified as hillbillies, but redneck was like a pejorative. Like that wasn't a nice thing to be called. In my hometown, 100 miles west in the same state, it was actually the exact opposite. People like self-identified as redneck and hillbilly was like kind of an insult. And now I feel like it's sort of neither and both at the same time. It like, is there a different hillbilly traditionally is like Appalachian people or people from the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. And then redneck is, I mean, I think Jeff Foxworthy actually had the best definition for it. He says the glorious absence of sophistication. That's, I mean, I agree with that. But in turn, like the terms themselves, I mean, honestly, I want to say they're interchangeable, but depending on where you're at in the South or in the country, people will get mad at you for that.
Right.
But like, I, at this point, I kind of use them interchangeably, honestly.
Yeah, you see, I have friends who live in West Virginia, and to be called a redneck is like the highest honor, because the term came from the Battle of Blair Mountain, where you had 10,000 striking miners who literally had bombs dropped on their heads by corporations, by the mine companies.
Yeah, there are West Virginians today who have tried to like sort of reclaim that designation for the word redneck, you know, because of that. And I get it. They should, because they should be proud of Blair Mountain and their labor history and everything. But like, I think it's too far gone now to get it back to that. But I respect it, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just one of those. I was wondering if there was a difference from your perspective, because, you know, what's interesting is, you know, we kind of share a lot of the same views, but I grew up very differently. I grew up in an inner city housing project, the lone white kid in an all black neighborhood. We used to play this neat game called Chase the White Kid and beat the crap out of him.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a completely different way of looking at things, and yet, politically, we're somewhere on the same side of the map, which is interesting how two different people living in poverty come to the same kind of policy conclusions.
Yeah, because I've always thought, and look, obviously, it's one of the huge things in American politics is that it doesn't always work this way. You see a huge number of people, usually white people, who are living in poverty or grew up in poverty, who don't see it this way. But I actually always kind of felt like that what you just said like made sense. Like I always felt like, because I grew up dirt poor, my mom was a felon and a drug addict, raised by a single dad who was on disability and everything. I mean, we had nothing. And I always felt like that to be sort of like progressive was the thing that made the most sense, you know, given my circumstances. And I thought it made sense that we're talking about Blair Mountain in West Virginia, like poor people or working people or whatever coming together against like the man is the thing that should happen. Like
right.
You should expect that. Like, that's what I would like to see happen. But because of all the different, like, you know, propaganda and ideology and stuff that's happened in this country, you don't see that as much as you should. But I think like in a perfect world, there is no poverty, but you know what I mean? To me, it totally makes sense what you just said about you and I, given our differing backgrounds. It makes sense to me that we landed on the same thing. Because like, I think it all comes down to money at the end of the day. You know, poverty, socioeconomic issues are at the heart of everything. And all the rest of it is like, you know, whatever, different coats of paint that different people put on it to serve their own purposes.
Yeah, I always said it until recently. I've amended my views. It's not really about black and white. It's about green. Because, you know, where I grew up, everyone was broke. But right. I'm amending that a little bit because, you know, the black community has been just, you know, just devastated by institutional racism and all of the, you know, the treatment by police. Look, when I was a kid growing up in the project, the cops weren't any better. And I got smacked around enough on my own, but it's clearly much worse in the black community. I want to get your thought.
You know, real quick, I went through the same process you just outlined too, because like, you know, it's funny. It's like if people think about rednecks, they think conservative. And if they think rednecks and cops, now they're going to be like, yeah, rednecks are Blue Lives Matter people. But that's always been wild to me, because when I was growing up, like rednecks and cops didn't get along. You know, there's a storied history. Moonshiner hillbillies.
Yeah.
NASCAR started with running from the law. Like,
did you watch Dukes of Hazzard?
Dukes of Hazzard, Smokey and the Bandit. Every other episode of Cops takes place in the trailer park. Like rednecks and cops don't get along. And I used to always feel the same way as you. Was like, nah, black and white, none of that's real. It is. It's just about green. It's poor people. That's what it is, because they hate us too. They hate poor white people too. And like, they being rich people, they do hate poor white people. But like you just said, it's not the same thing though. There is still a difference, and it is worse for, you know, I mean, because I'm like a well-to-do white man now.
you're Horatio Alger. You pulled yourself up by the bootstraps.
Right.
Now you're a somebody.
Yeah, right. But you can't change the color of your skin, you know. So it ain't the same thing, but I know exactly where you're coming from, though.
Yeah. I want to get your thoughts, lastly, on the union election that just happened down in, and Bessemer, Alabama. And some of the messaging that came out of there, I mean, there's a view that you can't organize the South. And yet, you know, the South is where we have to organize the most. Right. I'm curious if you have any thoughts.
I'm extremely disappointed, but not surprised in that, result. I want it to be different. We're talking about this. I have a live podcast that I do weekly right before your show at 5 p.m. Pacific called Weekly Skews on my social pages. And we were talking last week in depth about Bessemer and how important it was. And I do think it's important. And we're talking about West Virginia tonight and labor movements and all that. And it's, what happened in Bessemer is hugely disappointing. But I was saying tonight, like, I don't know. It's hard because I think you need a government. You need a larger body in place who will actually look out for these people and do something about it, because I understand the perspective of, like, an actual working person in Bessemer who's being told by Amazon's propaganda, right? They're being told, like, look, all that's going to happen is you're going to lose your job. Like, you want your job to be better, but you're not going to have it anymore. If we can't treat you like crap, we're going to go somewhere where we can treat them like crap. That's just how it works. And when that person hears that and they're like, well, I mean, this ain't ideal, but I don't want to lose my job. Like, I can't fault that person, but I hate the situation though. And as far as, like, the answer to it, I think there has to be a power structure in place, you know, higher up, that can just prevent that type of thing from happening, because I don't know what else to do about it. I'll try to make this a brief story. I've got a buddy that works for a very big company in Tennessee when they first came to Tennessee, and they were talking about unionizing. This is like Bessemer, but years ago now. And they were talking about unionizing, and they had an employee retreat they had on the subject of unionizing. And they told them, like, we're going to cover both sides, so you see both sides of the argument. It's going to be a fair employee retreat on the subject of whether you should unionize or not. He said he got there. The first thing was they went in this big conference room, and there was a big banquet table lined up with donuts and coffee and all this stuff. And they said, okay, the first item in the agenda, we have this woman from the union. She's here to talk to you about the benefits of unionizing. She walks in the door, walks over to the donuts, spits on all their donuts, and starts berating all of them to their face, because obviously she didn't work for the union. But that's what they like. That's how over the top they are with the demonizing of unions. And it's like, it's we need something.
Yep. I'm right there with
you. It's rough. It's a rough situation.
And we got lots to do. And like I said, you know, we do need legislation. But Trey, I appreciate you taking time for us. I got to tell you, you make me laugh. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
Absolutely, Rick. I'd love to. Thank you, buddy.
Beautiful. Good stuff. Trey Crowder, the comedian, co-author of the Liberal Redneck Manifesto, Dragon Dixie Out of the Dark. Make sure you take a look at that. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.